on Distinct Nostalgia, we're taking you back to the late 70s and an iconic series from Australia, which became a cult classic. Ashley's been chatting to Colette Mann, who played one of the original stars of Prisoner, or Prisoner Cell Block H, as it was known around the world. Colette's character Doreen was a firm fan favourite, but Colette also went on to have two roles in Neighbours and starred in a plethora of other things, including Priscilla Queen of the Desert, on stage. She's now in the UK and has just finished her first pantomime. Enjoy this chat down memory lane. Now, how did that theme tune to Prisoner go again? Used to give me roses, I wish he would again. That was on the outside, things were different then. On the inside, the sun still... on the outside... Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, I never was...
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Colette, thank you very much indeed for joining us for Distinct Nostalgia, where we interview actors and writers and various people who are associated with the fantastic, often legendary programmes that we've all grown up with and we continue watching in the droves. And when I think of Prisoner Cell Block H, which I'm sure we're going to mainly talk about, obviously we'll talk about some of the other things you've done as well. But when I think about Prisoner Cell Block H, it's amazing how popular it still is. I was only on a forum last night and they were all raving about the fact that it's going to be shown on some minor channel in the UK that's just been launched, which is going to show every single episode of it, apparently. And they're all really excited about these episodes that are being run from the very, very beginning yet again. It is amazing, isn't it, how a programme has sustained so long?
Yes, it is amazing. It's also amazing that they're still playing it and we don't get paid for it. Sorry about that political statement, but...
True, only, it's important, yeah.
Only one cast member was clever enough to know that that was what was going to happen, and she omitted to tell the rest of us. And so they are continually playing it because it's cheap.
Yeah.
They don't have to pay residuals.
But huge fan base, massive fan base.
Yes, aging fan base, I think.
I think there are new people who are watching it, though. I think there are new people. I mean, my partner never saw it the first time round, a bit younger than me, and thinks it's amazing and thinks it's really, you know, compared to a lot of other things today, likes the sort of the rawness of it, really, the reality of it.
Yes, it's definitely raw. I can't watch it now because I just see everything that's wrong with it. But I do still talk about being in it because it was the thing that basically turned my career around. So from that point of view, I'm very glad that I did it. It was, you know, I learned a lot. I learned a great deal because I'd only ever done small television roles before that, you know, small guest roles. And to get a role in something that was so recognisable in Australia initially, and then now it's become recognisable overseas, is a great thing. And I'm very grateful for it. I find it a little, mystifying that people still say, oh, you don't look any different. And I go, it was 45 years ago. I was 28. I'm now 73. I do look different and you need to get glasses.
Well, it's true. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. People are strange, aren't they? They think everyone's going to stay in aspic, don't they? They're going to stay exactly the same as they always were. Okay, well, I mean, my connection with it is just as an ordinary person who watched it as a little boy. I was about 8 or 9. And the thing that it started off in the UK in the Yorkshire TV region, and then eventually it went into other regions because it was popular there. But my mum and all her friends in the locality would get together and literally they'd congregate together and watch it together every time it was on. It was the same thing happened with Dallas, actually, but particularly with Prisoners of Cell Block H, it was a very much a women in particular came together. Mums came together to watch it and it was their little treat every week. Is that a similar story in most places, do you think?
I don't think that happened in Australia so much because, I mean, it became very popular from the word go in Australia, which was surprising. But I think possibly, well, I don't know if it was the same here, but in Australia, it was the first series that actually was basically mainly women, because in the original cast, there were 14 of us and there was only one man. And that was the guy who played Eddie, the electrician, Richard Moyer. And I know at the time of auditioning, every woman that, you know, could speak basically was auditioning for it. So it was considered to be very, like, the plum job to get. And that makes me a bit, I don't know if it happens over here, but definitely in Australia, we've still got people complaining about, oh, there's no good women's roles and there's never been any good women's roles. And I always say 45 years ago, there were, you know, 13 great women's roles, and then ongoing from there, because it ran for 8 years in Australia, lots and lots of guest roles, lots and lots of regulars that came in when people left. So I get a little tired of people whinging about, oh, there's no decent roles for women. Prisoner was right up there. And then, of course, the reimagined version, Wentworth, which is a wonderful series.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. And it's true. There were a lot of women. And you're right. It is true over here, because a lot of people say, oh, it's only recently when women have got this, that, and that. But actually, back in the 70s in particular, actually, there was a lot of women in comedy. There's loads of comedy sitcoms were full of women, you know, and people forget this. It's weird, but we sort of seem to rewrite history, don't we, with some of these things?
Yes, absolutely.
It's ridiculous.
Interestingly enough, A Prisoner was based on an English series called Within These Walls with Googie Withers, who is an Australian, or was an Australian. She's passed. But that was only one series. I think it only ran for maybe 13 episodes, and that's what Prisoner was based on.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. But I think the big thing, of course, was the fact that it was an insight into a women's prison. I mean, we also had a program over here called Juliet Bravo, which was about police women, and nobody ever saw police women on TV. So that again was a groundbreaking series, because it was like, in fact, I think for years and years and years, the only people I knew who were police women were the two women on the TV that I saw on a regular basis. I've actually got to know the actresses since then, which is quite interesting looking back. But okay, tell us a bit about the beginnings then, about how you got the role and fitting into that character, because she was one of my favourites, actually, one of my favourite characters at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about becoming that character.
Well, basically, I was in theatre at the time. I was doing quite a lot of theatre, working for the Melbourne Theatre Company, which is kind of like the National Theatre here, but we have state-based companies that are funded, you know, by the government. And I, at the time, when I was asked to audition for it, I was doing a theatre restaurant show. I don't know if you have those here, but a show that I'd written with a friend. And we were touring that, and we were in Sydney at the time. And a lady called Kerry Spence, who was the original casting woman, came to see it and asked to see me afterwards. And I had never met her before. And she said that they were casting this prison series for women, and that was the first I'd heard of it. And she said, we'd like you to audition. And I said, oh, but I'm in Sydney and I'm going to Brisbane and wherever, and it was going to be shot in Melbourne. And she said, well, it's not for a few months yet, but we'll make sure that you get to Melbourne to audition, which I did. And I auditioned originally for Lynn Warner, and then I didn't hear anything for ages. And then I got a call to come back in, and they said, oh, we've written this character called Doreen, so we want you to audition for her now. So I did. And then the next time I came in, I screen tested, because in those days we didn't do screen tests or self-tapes or any of that nonsense we have to do now. We just went in and acted in a room with people looking at us. It was really interesting. So I went in and I was teamed up with Sheila Florence, who played Lizzie Birdsworth, and Val Lehman, who played B. Smith. And we did a scene that eventually ended up in episode one together. And then I didn't hear anything for about 2 months. And so I, you know, I just went on with whatever my job was at the time. I think I was still touring. And then suddenly I was told that I had the role, and we all turned up and they talked to us, and I didn't know anybody else. I mean, I knew of people. I knew Val and Sheila because I tested with them, but I didn't know. Oh, and Kerry Armstrong, who played Lynn Warner, I had worked with her in a theatre show, so I knew her. And I knew of Peter Tapano. But we started in November 1978. That's when we actually started shooting it. It didn't go to air till February 79. So you're kind of shooting in a vacuum because you don't really know what, you know, like, I mean, I've just finished, or 2 years ago, finished 10 years of Neighbours, but you know what you're shooting because it's on all the time. Whereas this, we were just shooting and it would go and we didn't see it back or anything like that. And it also, initially, for the first 12 episodes, we were only hired for the first 12 episodes. They were 1 hour episodes and we were only shooting 1 hour a week, which is was why, for me, they're the best episodes, the first 12. And then it went to 2 hours a week and we had to make 2 hours a week. And if you, the more on-air time you make, the less the production value, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the same in soap all over, isn't it now? It's sort of, it's like a conveyor belt, isn't it, a lot of the time?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did 10 years on Neighbours, and that was, for most of that 10 years, we were doing 6 episodes a week, which is 3 hours of television a week. And it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Standards are going to be hit, aren't they, in that kind of situation? Absolutely. So tell me a bit about the character. She was quite endearing, actually, wasn't she? I mean, I know all these were criminals, we know that, and they all could be all turned very nasty, but there was something quite endearing about your character.
Apparently, yes. Could have been me. You never know, Ashley. I could be quite endearing. I think I've grown out of it, though. Look, I was told at the beginning, you weren't never given much in the way of a character Bible or anything like that, because I was told she was an orphan. And then, of course, years later, her mother turned up, so that was embarrassing. I was told she was an orphan and that she was in for forging checks, I think, initially, and had done some prostitution. And I was 28 and I was told she was 17. I don't know what she was doing in an adult prison, but, you know, we don't worry about things like that.
Artistic license.
Yes, exactly. So I was told that she was 17. So being 28, I played her much younger than myself. And luckily in those days I could get away with it. It was interesting because they hired me to be, or they wrote the character of Doreen basically to be a foil for the Lizzie Birdsworth character. And after the first maybe 3 or 4 episodes were shot, they came to both of us and said, because we were just supporting, and they came to us and said, no, we're putting you up to lead characters and we're putting you with B. Smith or Val Lehman. And so that we went into her cell and whatever. And so we were there mainly for comic value initially, I think, because Reg Watson, who, you know, came up with the whole idea, was very way ahead of his time in knowing that word dramedy, you know, drama and comedy together works best rather than just drama, 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 drama. And so we were considered to be the comedic characters. And I learnt so much from Sheila. She'd done so much television all over the world, like in London and everywhere. And she was a handful, God love her, but she was amazing and amazing to me and taught me so much about comedy and about working in front of camera and all those things that I hadn't done much of. And so it wasn't until Frankie and Doreen escaped towards, I think, about episode 9 or 10 or something, that they realised that I could be dramatic as well. So then I became sort of both after that.
Yeah, you're talking about Reg Watson, of course, the connection, there's a big connection, as we all know, between Crossroads over here, which was Reg's, one of Reg's programs, then Neighbours, and it's really interesting. I don't think they've ever done a program looking at all these connections, actually, because there are some great connections with all these shows and some legendary characters that were created over the years. I think some of those really early episodes were fantastic. They were really, and I mentioned earlier on that there was a rawness about it. And
yeah,
there certainly was a, you know, it's sort of, yeah, we'd get lots of dramatic shows today, and you know, violence and things is everywhere, isn't it? But there was something extra special about the rawness in some of these episodes. I don't quite know what it is, but there was something special about it.
Well, for me, the difference was, because as I said, I've just done a long stint in Neighbours, and the way, so look, some of the changes are really good, but the way television has changed over the 45 years that I've been in television is that now we have, like in Neighbours, if I had to chop up something on the bench in my kitchen, we had to have a safety officer there. And I would say to them, I hung by my ankles off the top of this building with two prop guys hanging onto my ankles. Do you know what I mean? Like, in prisoner. So I don't know. And I have actually chopped a few things up occasionally at home in my own kitchen. I do know how to do it, as well as I've also hosted 3 cooking programs. So I'm fine, you know. Or if you fell on the ground, you had to have 5 mats, and then you had to be shown by the safety officer how to fall. And look, I know it's their jobs, and it's great. And it's great to have them there when you've got, you know, like fire and other things and car crashes and stuff like that. But it just has become so, I don't know, pathetic now that...
Suffocating, isn't it?
You have to have a safety officer because you're chopping up carrots, you know. Like, I'm an actor. I know what I'm doing, you know. And so I suppose the rawness of it was that we... In the fight scenes, we didn't have stunt coordinators. We just did it. We worked it out, you know, ourselves. I don't say we just fought. We would work it out, but it would all be us doing it, not somebody there standing saying, you push her there and you do this now and whatever, which, of course, is important now because people are so litigious, you know, and if they get hurt, you know, if they break a nail, you know, it's all hell breaks loose. So, yeah, so I think that's where the rawness and the grittiness of it comes from.
No, I absolutely agree with you on that. From the very start, it could be seen as quite shocking. It was tackling things between these women that long before anybody else was tackling any of those kind of things. Did you know what you were, obviously you got the scripts, I'm sure, but did you know what you were letting yourself in for, is what I'm going to ask
No,
you.
Not really. I mean, like any actor, you're just happy to have the job. And as far as I was concerned, I'd just finished another play at the Melbourne Theatre Company, and which ran for, I don't know, 7 weeks or something on fairly small money. And then I was offered this for, I think it was something like, I was being paid $363 a week, which to me was like being paid $3 million today, you know. And so, and I had work for 14 weeks. And so I'd come from theatre, where you would get a job with one of the state theatre companies or occasionally with a commercial company, and it would run for maybe 6 weeks. And so to have work for 14 weeks, I would, you know, I didn't have any problems with what they were asking me to do.
When it was going out in the 1970s and 80s, just give us an impression, because over here it was on very late at night, tucked away, 11 o'clock, midnight or whatever. When would people see it in Australia? What time of day would it be on?
It was on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights for an hour, and it was on at 8:30 at
right,
night.
Okay.
So it was prime time.
Prime time.
And basically from... almost, I wouldn't say the first episode, but definitely by the first week, because we were on for, that's when we went to 2 hours a week, was about that time. It just became a huge, we couldn't go anywhere. You know, it was really, It's funny, you've got to be careful what you wish for. I keep saying this to my sons as well, because all my life in theatre, because I'd been in theatre for maybe 10 years by that stage, all I wanted was that somebody recognised me occasionally in the street. I never want that again. Because at that time, they used to do other things, Grundy's as they were then, Grundy organisation, they're now Fremantle, would make us go and do shopping centre appearances on a Friday night in shopping centres that were within maybe an hour's drive from where we were working in Nunawading. And we would have clothes ripped off us. We had security guards. We had cars. People, we would come back and we'd have to come back to work and work because we used to work to 9:15 at night. We'd come back to work at 7 o'clock with, you know, your uniforms ripped and all that, because people, I remember going to Brandon Park Shopping Centre, which is, I don't know where it is. It's in outer, but somewhere outside of Melbourne. And there was something like 20,000 people there. And I don't think there's 20,000 people in Brandon Park.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
I'm
trying.
Oh,
yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We going to have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it, play with it. No. Take that shit serious.
Now that must have been, yeah, absolute nightmare, to be honest. And it's the same here. I've interviewed quite a few people I know have become good friends who were big stars in the 70s and 80s, and you know, they literally couldn't. They couldn't walk down the street without, you know, they couldn't go to the local shop without being recognised and people, you know, asking them questions and things. Absolute nightmare, really. I think things have changed since then, in a way. Not everything's changed for the better, but things have changed a little bit, haven't they, in terms of... Presumably you're still recognised now, though, in Australia, are you?
Yes, yeah. I mean, not nowhere near as much as I used to be, and I've done lots of other things in Australia too, so it's not... But it is still... for Prisoner or Neighbours, or it's usually for television. Occasionally people will say, because I did for 2.5 years in Australia, I did the original Priscilla, the musical, Queen of the Desert, and people will come up and go, I loved you in, and I go, yeah, I know. And then they say Priscilla, and I go, oh, really? You know? And here in London, people say, do you get recognised all the time? And I say, no, I don't, because the good thing about being in London is I get stared at, but people think I live in Australia. So they look at me and think, oh, that looks like, but by that stage I've moved on, you know. So, I mean, people do talk to me, and I've just done Panto and,
yes.
Oh, my God, and there were there were a lot of people that knew that I was doing the Panto in Red Hill because of social media, of course, which has changed a lot.
Yeah.
And they were sending me things. I've just finished doing it today. I got something like 40 photos of myself, which I find very odd, and the girl I was sharing a dressing room with found it hilarious, that, you know, they want you to sign and then send back to them, you know, and I got to the point where I only sent back the ones that sent a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yeah,
send it to you and expect you to pay to send it back to them. And I thought, I did a couple, and then I thought, no, why am I doing this? This is costing me £2-3, you know, because I'm from Scotland and Belgium and places like that. And it was mainly Neighbours fans, I have to say, many Prisoner fans. But, it's weird here, and I mean, I like it here because I'm not as recognisable here as I am at home.
You know? I can understand that. Just we'll talk a little bit about other stuff in a minute, but just on Prisoner for a second. You were in it for, was it 4 years you were in it? Were you in it for
3 years. I left after 3 years, and then I went back twice, once for 2 weeks which was part of my original contract. If you, when I was leaving after 3 years, they said, we need you back. So it was all, you know, decided. Yeah. And then about a year later, after that 2 weeks, they rang me because I was working on a different show, not a drama. I was working on a live variety show. They rang and said that they were having problems with ratings and that they had wanted to bring myself and Sheila back, but Sheila unfortunately was not well enough. And so I went back for 3 months, and actually that was the best 3 months I spent in the whole show.
Oh, really?
Because I knew I'd been away from it for 12 months or over 12 months. And I came back. So I knew the character. I knew what I was doing. I knew the lay of the land. I knew how it all worked. You know, I knew the time schedules, and I could read the running sheets and all of that sort of stuff. But I didn't have to get involved in the politics.
Yes, I can.
And the politics was like rife by that stage because, and look, I'm a feminist, but put 14 or 15 women together in a green room, they're going to rip each other apart. And that's what happened. And that's why I left too, because it sort of, you went, you saw it go round the circle, you know, how we all didn't like this person. And then we moved on to the next person. We didn't like that person. And it had been round once past me and it was coming back again. And I thought, no, I'm leaving. So I left.
So there was some similarities between the program and reality then.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it too has got to do with the working hours, because we were working from 6 a.m. till 9:15. And it was mainly a core group of about 8 or 9 women. And, you know, at times it does get, you're too familiar with everybody, you know, and that was the same with Neighbours. The reason I left Neighbours, I just thought, I can't bear to look at that person one more time. not my family. I loved my family, but you know, you can't like everybody, and everybody gets really upset when I say that, because people, particularly English people, because they really like to like everybody. You can't like everybody, and not everybody likes you, and you just need to live with it, you know.
And it can be very intensive, kind of really intensive, can't it, if you're in that kind of situation? Yeah, absolutely. So, what were your? I mean, you had some fantastic storylines over the time that you were there.
Yeah. Totally repeated when they brought in Genevieve Lemon, who then played Maureen, not Maureen. And she just continued on the character, basically, with a slightly different name. I just feel that, you know, it was time for Doreen to leave, really.
Which storylines were your favourites then, when you look back?
I think where she tried to hang herself was probably pretty good. I liked the storylines with Kevin, played by a beautiful actor, Ian Gilmore, who's a director in Australia now, never given me work, but lovely guy. I liked all of the original stuff with Frankie. I thought that was great, but she didn't want to go to 2 hours a week. She was very principled about that, and she was a wonderful actress and complicated woman, but a wonderful actress, and I learned a lot from her too.
Who did you get on with most then, do you think?
Oh, God, I don't know. I can't remember. It was 45 years ago. Well, Sheila mainly.
Yeah.
Fiona Spence, who played Vera Bennett. Judith McGrath, who played, I can't remember what, Colleen somebody she played. You know, it depended too. When Betty Bobbitt came in, because I knew her from a previous show I'd been in, it was nice to have her there. Jane Clifton, I'm still sort of friends with on social media. But a lot of them are dead now. So, you know, I'm one of the survivors.
Colette Mann's chat with Ashley will continue in a few minutes. We're kicking off a whole new season of Gems from Distinct Nostalgia, as we remember the great TV and films of the past with the people who were there.
it was a comedy about language. It wasn't really a comedy about race or religion or stereotypes. It was a sitcom built on puns and mispronunciation of the English language. And it put Barry back on top, you know, from somebody who had been a star to go in, you know, and being on the dole. He was now back in front of 18 million viewers every week.
He was a huge TV star for years. Ashley talks to Daniel Ward, the writer of a new book about the intriguing life of Barry Evans. And we're reuniting three of the original cast of Mind Your Language.
Hello, I'm George Camilla and I play Giovanni, the Italian student.
Hello, I'm Françoise Pascal and I play Daniel Favre.
Hello, my name is Pixen Lim. I play Chung Su Lee, who was a student in China and great follower of Chairman Mao.
Staying with ITV, we're also remembering the classic late-night sitcom Shelley.
The way he talked about going and signing on was the way everybody wanted to talk about going and signing on. You know, nobody really wants to do it. Everybody's quite grateful to get the money, but they don't want to have to do lots of interviews for jobs that they're overqualified for. And so he said everything that everybody wanted to.
Belinda Sinclair gives us an insight into working with Hal Bennett and Josephine Tewson. And we're back at 165 Eaton Place as we go upstairs, downstairs.
So they were absolutely scrupulous about period detail. On rare occasion, they did get something wrong. They would get hundreds of letters saying they would never have put that up on that particular source or whatever it was. There was painstaking about all of that.
Jacqueline Tong played Daisy in the classic period drama, and she'll be recalling great memories of her legendary co-stars. Veteran actor Melvin Hayes joins us from his home on the Isle of Wight with some great anecdotes from over 70 years in show business.
On the Monday morning, we got phone calls saying, don't come to Yorkshire, stay exactly where you are. The rest of it was canned. And they paid us six episodes on all our expenses. And it was voted the worst TV series ever made.
And then we're chatting behind the camera with prolific TV director Royston Mayo, whose credits include This Is Your Life, Opportunity Knocks, Tommy Cooper and Les Dawson.
They did His Life in America and then gave him his book and said, hey, Andrews, this is your life. It's also your show. That was a wonderful line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And George Layton talks candidly about his friend Richard O'Sullivan, as well as his own writing credits.
I wrote 13 Robbie's Nests,
yeah, yeah,
and a Christmas episode. I mean, I didn't create that series,
no,
but I did it with the same passion as if I had done, which got up Tony Britton's nose a bit. You know, I don't think he didn't like me coming with my notes to a part he'd been playing for several years.
Actor Jonathan Kidd looks back over an amazing career, including voicing some iconic TV ads.
I don't know why there was a complaint, but the huge furore made sure that Ferrero Rocher was forever emblazoned, was ever stuck in everybody's head from then on, because everybody was looking for the commercial.
We're also remembering some classics of kids' TV.
Why don't you? Why don't you? Why don't you just switch off your television set and go out and do something less boring instead? Sitting at home, watch TV, turn it off, no good for me, etc., etc. And thank God it was changed for when I was on it. But that's the theme tune that everyone remembers, and that's the theme tune that was sung to me on most buses on the way to school and walking through town for a good couple of years after I finished.
That's Phil Noble, one of the original Liverpool gang, on Why Don't You? To come, we're behind the scenes on The Bill, meeting Wurzel Gummidge's real child star friend, spending time with Zippy and George from Rainbow, and going back to Wentworth with members of the original cast of Prisoner Cell Block H. These new shows and a 200-hour-plus back catalogue are available on Distinct Nostalgia. Search by scrolling up and down in the feed wherever you get your podcasts. A new year and a new season of shows on Distinct Nostalgia.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
When did you realise, when did you all realise it was, obviously it was big in Australia, but then it started to go out, you know, Britain started having it. When did it become such a global thing? When did you realise how big it was globally, do you think?
I don't think it was while I was still there. No? I think a long time after I'd left. And that was about the time that we all heard that one person was getting residuals and we weren't.
Right. Yeah.
I think that was about, maybe 8 or 9 years later.
Yeah. Just a very couple of things about the actual program Prisoner. We'll go on to something else. But the other thing was that I always remember was the sets. There was a joke that they were a bit wobbly. Am I right?
Well, they were permanent. They were permanent sets in that studio, which eventually became my house in Neighbours, strangely enough, was in that studio. But they were wobbly. But looking at it now, it's lit like a drama.
Yes, yeah.
Which was really interesting for that time, because everything else, like if you look at Neighbours even today, it's like a huge ad. You know, it's all light everywhere.
And reality isn't like that, is it, really? Reality is dark. There's no
shadows or anything, yeah. Whereas at least right back there in 1978,
yeah.
The lighting director, and I really wish I could remember his name, it was something Swift, and he had long blonde hair, I remember, tied in a ponytail, and he was wonderful, and he lit the whole thing like a drama. And
yeah. No, it's
and
great.
So
fantastic.
People say to me, "Oh, it's a soap." It wasn't a soap. No. It was a drama.
There was a sitcom over here. I don't know if it ended up in Australia called Porridge, which was
I loved it.
And when that came out in the '70s, it felt like it was recorded done in a proper prison.
Yes,
it was a comedy, but you felt the reality of it being in a prison. You cared for the characters because you thought they are behind bars. And then they did a remake of it several years later with a new character playing Ronnie Barker's grandson or something. And it was so plastic looking. And the colours were so bright. And you just thought, this doesn't, it's weird, isn't it? But the lighting does matter. It really matters.
Well, it does. It does matter. And I mean, the sets were fine for the time, but they don't look so great now. But at least they made the effort. And for that, I'm internally grateful.
And the acting was brilliant. The acting was fantastic. Well, really good.
It had its moments.
No, you were really good. You were really, really good. The other thing that I loved about it, actually, was the theme tune that became a hit, didn't it? A big hit. That was fantastic. Really, really good. Is the lady who did that still around? Is she still around?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Everybody expects... That's a funny thing, is that people expect you to remember
everything about it.
It was 45 years ago, and I've had a long time. Lifetime since then. And I'm not, this upsets a lot of people when I say it, is that I'm not particularly sentimental. People say, oh, did you keep anything? No. Why would I? It was a job. It's funny, I was on my way home, I went to see, because I teach a lot in Australia, and I've done some teaching here. And I went to see an ex-student who's in Elf, you know, the musical. Last night, and I was coming home on the train, and this guy sat down next to me. God love him. And I don't know why he started talking to me. He never mentioned Neighbours or Prisoner or anything, so I don't assume he knew that I was an actor when he sat down. But he was drunk, and he started to tell me how he was an actor and he was struggling. And I thought, oh, God, leave me alone. And he started saying, you know, why aren't more of us work? And then when he finally got out of me that I was an actor, and he was saying, don't you keep in contact with any of the people that you know, that you worked with? And I went, no, why would I? It's a job. You move on. You know, like you, in every job you do, you might meet two people that you keep in your friendship circle, if you're lucky. Yeah. But you can't keep them all, you know?
No.
And people are constantly saying to me, but aren't you still friends with this one or that one? And I go, no, I'm not. And I never was. So why would I be friendly with them? So I'm very unsentimental. I'm sorry.
No, I understand that. I understand that. Right, let's talk about Neighbours for a second. You've mentioned Neighbours quite a bit, actually, in terms of your recent reincarnation. You've been in it for, as you say, about 10 years you were in it?
Yes, 10 years.
But you were in it before, weren't you, for a very short period as another character?
8 weeks, yeah. It took over from a very good friend of mine, Caroline Gilmer, who got very, very ill. And they came and asked me, I was working on radio at the time, and they came and asked me and said, can you take over for a couple of weeks while she gets better? And then it ended up being 8 weeks. So I played a character called Cheryl Stark for 8 weeks. Can't remember, 1995, maybe? I don't know.
How do you do that? How do you fit into a character for 8 weeks?
Well, it wasn't easy because they'd got to the point because she had been sick. When they asked me to take over, she had been sick for a month. And when they decided to ask me to take over was when she was admitted to hospital. And they suspected she had cancer. She didn't, thank God. And she's still alive and kicking and very well and healthy. But it was a massive infection of something. I don't actually know why. And they came and asked me to take over, and I had the weekend. They came and asked me on the Friday afternoon because Grundy Organisation used to be at the back of the radio studio that I was in. And they came and said, what are you doing on Monday? And I was finishing because I used to be what they call emergency. I used to go in when people were sick at 3AW in Melbourne. And I said nothing because I was finishing that day. Because somebody was coming back from holidays and they said, oh, can you come and play Cheryl Stark for a couple of weeks? And so they sent me something like 60 scripts over the weekend. And because they'd shot nearly everything that they could possibly shoot without her in it. Like they'd even shot parts of scenes with her not in it, you know.
Right.
And so I started on the Monday. She wore a wig and I said, I don't want to wear the wig because I don't, that was hers and I didn't want to do that. And I said, so I got there at something like 4 o'clock in the morning on the Monday morning and they decided what I was going to look like. And then we started and we did what they call rehearse record, which means you don't have a rehearsal day. You rehearse on there just before you record it. So they just kept bringing in characters and saying, I'm your husband, we get on well together, da, da, da. Because I'd never watched it. So, and I still haven't. I'm your son, I've been to Africa, we don't like each other. Okay, action, go. And that. So for the first 2 weeks of that character, I'm not very good. But, you know, I can understand why I'm not very good, but I settled into it. And then eventually around the month mark, they said she's coming back. And we got ready for her to come back and then she was not coming back. And then I did another month after that. And then eventually she was well enough to come back, which I was very happy about.
It must have been very strange for all of you, but also for the viewers as well.
But American soaps do it all the time.
I know.
I was the first one to ever do it in Australia.
It happens in Britain in the sense that I know there's several characters in, say, EastEnders that have been played by about six different people over time. But I don't think anybody's ever done it for such a short space of time and then come back as the other person's come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. They've replaced characters all the time in Neighbours since then, but I was the very first one to ever do it. So I was proud of that I was the first.
Fantastic, fantastic. So tell us, you've written a couple of books, am I right? Is that right?
Yes, and I'm supposedly in the middle of writing another one, but at the moment I was asked by Simon & Schuster in Australia. And they've just dropped out because they've gone very sort of sporting celebrity type people, you know.
Oh, okay.
So I'd written half of it, so I'm hoping that I might be able to get somebody interested over here.
Well, tell us about the other books that you've written. It'd be nice to let the audience know about the books that you've written. You've written two. Is that two books?
They're out of print now. But I wrote one when I was pregnant with my second child, called It's a Man's World, as in MANS. And that was just a guide. That I wrote that with a friend, and it was a guide to women in the 90s. And it's just, you know, random, stupid ideas like getting your house renovated and you know, stuff like that. It was mostly amusing.
Right.
Going through a divorce, all that sort of stuff, you know. That was the first divorce. And then I wrote when my eldest son was 12, he broke his leg in 24 places. He likes to do things well. And I was unable to work. I was actually doing a one-woman show that was touring at the time called The Vagina Monologues.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't do it. I couldn't tour because he couldn't go to school because his leg was in a what they call a Zakharov cage. You know, yes. It's where they put pins through your legs. And so he couldn't go to the very expensive school that was, you know, making me work so many hours because it didn't have ramps in those days. They'd have ramps coming out their ear holes now. But anyway, they didn't then. So I couldn't work. And so the tour was truncated. Like the producer was fantastic. He didn't replace me. He just changed the dates. And so I had to have 7 months off while Sam recuperated and I homeschooled him and all that. And so while I was doing that, I said, let's write a book about this. So that one's called Give Me a Break. And it was supposedly written by myself, my son Sam with the broken leg, and his brother Charlie, who felt that he needed to be part of it. Except, you know, after the first chapter, they didn't write anymore and I had to channel them as well. So, so I've written those two books. And the next one is basically, well, I suppose it would be considered to be a memoir, but how I've written it is because I teach a lot, acting, it's based on the way I teach and how that relates to my life, if you know what I mean. Like one of the things that I teach when I'm teaching is if you can't cry or you can't laugh at that point in the script, you have to find another way. And finding another way is another thing that I do in my own life, if you know what I mean.
So
that will remind me of a story of my own life. So it's a bit of a teaching book and it's a bit of a memoir. So I just have to get another publisher interested now. So
fantastic. Yeah, I just thought it'd be nice for people to realize that you've got lots of strings to your bow, as it were. Yes. And of course, you've just been in pantomime here in the UK.
Oh God, yes!
Is that the first time you've done it?
Yes, I was asked by a friend, the guy who directed it, Andrew Lineford. I've only known him for 12 months. I met him this time last year over here when I came over to have a look around to see if this was what I wanted to do with my life or the rest of my life. And I met him then, and he's been immensely helpful to me, helping me get an agent and helping me get work and things.
Is this
like
Andrew?
That.
Andrew used to be in EastEnders.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
I know him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's an adorable man, and he's been so helpful to me. And he said, "I'm directing this panto at the end of the year. This is way back in June or something." And he said, "I'd love you to be in it." And I went, "Oh yeah, okay." Because it was wonderful to work with him, and he's a terrific director, and I loved every minute of it. I did make two or three really lovely friends. And on stage, I enjoyed it.
What did you play?
I played the witch in Beauty and the Beast. And the boy who played Gaston, a guy called Andrew Geeter, who lives in Blackpool. That's somewhere near Manchester, isn't it?
Not far away.
Yeah, he was became a great friend. The lovely Joanna Adeyinka Burford, who she's on CBeebies or something.
Yeah.
She was Belle, and she was delightful and joined, and she was, I shared a tent with her, tent inside a tent, which was our dressing room with the damp floor where our costumes used to get wet all the time. Oh, it's hideous.
Do we have pantos in Australia?
No.
Okay.
And there's a very good reason for it. No, we don't.
Well, there you go. Baptism of fire is an experience. We all have new experiences throughout our lives, don't we?
Yes. I thought I was too old to be having so many new experiences, but that's what this whole jaunt is about, really.
Listen, it's been lovely to talk to you. You've gone on the screen. You've gone to two little dots now. As it's got darker.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay, don't worry.
Your shoulder keeps disappearing on my screen.
Yeah, I know. It's because I've got the logo thing behind us. So how long are you hoping here for then?
Who knows? People keep asking me and I keep saying, I don't know. Look, at the moment, I'm financially secure enough to be here for another 3 or 4 months if I don't get work. But if I don't get work, I'll go home. But I've got a really good agent. I've done a series in Belgium when I first got here playing an American. I get a lot of tests to test for Americans. And I did a great test for a thing for a Norwegian series. And then at the last minute, they decided to go with a Norwegian woman. I don't know why. My accent was flawless. But I got really close with that one. I've done a couple of ads. And
is this all you were saying earlier on? Is it all these tapes that you have to do over Zoom and stuff like that now?
Yes, absolutely. Constant self-taping. And I also have a part-time job where I role play for the medical profession, and you do all of that over Zoom. So, look, who knows? I'm enjoying being here at the moment. I get to see great theatre. I went to House of Bernarda Elba at the National Theatre on Monday night, and it was extraordinary with Harriet Walter. And because you're lucky if you see one good play in a year in Australia, and to be able to go to the theatre, you know, twice a week and see something worthwhile. So I don't know. If I get work, I could be here for another year. I go home for panto season, though. I'll go home for Christmas. If not, I'll go home. There's a possibility I might be taking over a role in the West End in May.
Oh, brilliant.
If I get that, I'll be here for another year.
But we'll watch out for you.
Look, I've had a career. And I don't mean to be, sad, but I've had a great career and I've done lots of amazing things, and even coming over here is pretty amazing at my age, and living on my own and dealing with, you know, the HMRC and the national health people and all of that sort of stuff. It's all been a bit of an adventure, and I'm just happy to do anything as long as it, you know, pays me some money and I get to meet different people, you know. So,
well, you want to enjoy yourself, don't you? You want to enjoy what you do, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And like this young actor that was talking to me last night said, "Oh, you know, I just want to play a really important role." He said, "Don't you?" I said, "No, I just want to get a job that pays me money." So there you have it. But anyway, Ashley, lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you, Clet, and I'm sure the listeners will. We'll love to have heard all your stories from the old days, because it is still very, very popular. And, in fact, last night, the very first episode went out on a new channel called That's TV 2 or something.
I know.
It was huge numbers watching it. But you do find that there is starting to be a market for the older stuff. You know, there's a channel here called Talking Pictures, which plays black and white films from the 40s and 50s. It's my default, because actually, you go to that and there's some brilliant stuff on there, you know.
No, I watched, do you know what I watched yesterday? The Lady Vanishes.
Oh, the black version.
And I just was amazed because it held my interest all the way through.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. The acting is absolutely brilliant. And sometimes the black and white films, that, you know, obviously it's black and white, it's not colour, but it doesn't lose anything from being black and white at all.
No.
You know,
it's really interesting.
Yeah,
but definitely. It's been lovely to talk to you.
It's been nice to talk to you as well, Clet.
And if I come to Manchester, I'll let you know. Okay,
no worries. Cheers, Clet.
Thank you. Bye.
Colette Mann chatting to Ashley. And don't forget, there's more than 200 hours of interviews, reunions, quizzes, as well as new comedy, drama and panel shows on the Distinct Nostalgia podcast. Just scroll through our archive wherever you get your podcasts anytime. And if you've a suggestion for an interview or reunion, contact us at info@madeinmanchester.tv.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Distinct Nostalgia is researched by Andrew Edwards and produced by Ashley Byrne. A Made in Manchester production.